Chapter 12. Though his armour insulated him from the cold beneath the mountains, Utam Luna Hesh Udar felt an insidious chill creep into his bones as he watched the mortal soldiers manoeuvre the nutrition dispenser along the bridge towards the floating island at the heart of Kangba Mawu. A fine mist of rain drizzled from the darkened recesses of the cavern's roof, and droplets of moisture condensed on the blade of his guardian spear. They hissed as the energy field vaporized them instantly, sounding like snakes drifting through the air. Its power would deplete quicker, but when there were enemies all around him, the seconds it would take to energize could cost him his life. Sumant Giri Falguni Tirtha stood beside him, his guardian spear also fizzing in the moist air. He looked up, droplets rolling down the golden plates of his helm like tears.
"Rain beneath the mountains," he said.
"I have never known the like."
"Cold in the world above," said Utam. "What does it matter?"
"The mountain weeps," said Tirtha.
"What?"
Tirtha shrugged as though embarrassed to continue.
"Spit it out," said Utam. "What troubles you?" "I have read the history of Kangba Mawu," said Tirtha. "It is said the mountain wept on the day Zamora escaped."
"No one is escaping today," said Utam. "Not on our watch."
"As you say," agreed Tirtha.
And though his face was hidden behind his helm's visor, Utam sensed a lingering unease in his body language.
"Come," he said. "Do not let a coincidence of subterranean precipitation keep the warriors of the Legio Custodes from their duties."
"Of course," said Tirtha,
as the soldiers eased the nutrition dispenser onto the cell island. The bulky container slipped as its repulsor field interacted with a stray wave emanation from the mighty generators holding the cell island afloat. A trooper in the grey tabard of the Aurelian Stormlords cursed as the intersecting field shocked him and he lost his grip.
"Watch what you're doing, dammit,"
he snapped, directing his anger outwards.
"Hold your end properly and it won't slip," said the man across from him,
a veteran sergeant of the Gitanan Outriders, an elite unit of flyers based in the Baikonur crater Ares.
"I'm carrying half your weight," said the man.
His name was Nataraj, and Utam had, until now, thought him one of the steadier members of his detail.
"Be silent," said Utam. "It is forbidden for you to speak while on duty."
"Apologies, custodian," said Nataraj. "It will not happen again."
"We are as one,"
added the outrider. But Utam suspected that whatever ill feeling existed between them would be taken up once they were beyond the confines of the mountain.
"When we are done here, you will return to the surface and collect your dismissal papers. I have no use for men who cannot follow orders," said Utam.
"Custodian," said Nataraj.
"My lord, please, hold your tongues, both of you," said Utam. "I do not tolerate dissent. You fail to understand what it is you do here. The danger of the prisoners you attend. Your commanding officers will hear of this lapse in discipline."
Both men glared at him, and Utam's stim gland swelled with trigger chemicals as his combat reflexes instinctively recognized anger and the threat of imminent violence. His grip tightened on his spear, but just as suddenly as the anger had surfaced, it vanished without trace, cut off as suddenly as though a switch had been thrown.
"Follow me,"
said Utam, turning and leading the soldiers between the cells. The lingering traces of combat stims danced in his veins, and Utam scanned the spaces between the cells for enemies. The only enemies on the island were locked up, but the brief exchange between the mortals had disquieted him. He was no believer in omens, but taken together with the drizzling rain, it had set him on edge, combat ready and instinctive. Not a good state to be in when caution and thoroughness was key.
"Which one first?" asked Tirtha.
"Tagore,"
said Utam, indicating a cell block to his right. Utam despised Tagore. He had killed 359 men before he had been subdued, and that made him almost as dangerous as a custodian. The soldiers hauled the nutrition dispenser around as Utam took position in front of the door. The warrior inside paced the length and breadth of the cell like a caged raptor, tension knotting his muscles and keeping his jaw clenched like a rabid wolf. The prisoner's physique was enormous, a giant clad only in a tattered loincloth. It had once been a standard-issue prison body glove, but the inmate had torn it to shreds. His body was a lattice of scars layered over gene-bulked muscle and ossified bone, while his flesh was a canvas of linked tattoos. Axes and swords mingled with skulls and jagged teeth that swallowed worlds whole. The back of the man's head was a nightmare of metal plates embedded in furrowed grooves cut into the bone of his skull, and there was a demented look to the warrior that no amount of self-control could quite mask.
"Back away from the door, traitor," ordered Utam.
The warrior bared his teeth, flinching at the word traitor, but complied. His back was to the far wall, but his muscles were bunched in anticipation of violence. Tagore was a world-eater, and Utam had never seen him in anything less than an attack posture. The others of his legion were just the same, and Utam wondered how they could stand to be so highly poised at all times. Some called the world-eaters undisciplined killers, psychopaths with tacit approval to be mindless butchers. But Utam knew better. After all, what kind of discipline must it take to maintain such a level of aggression so close to the surface on so tight a leash? The world-eaters were more dangerous than anyone gave them credit. Tagore eyed him with a feral grin, but said nothing.
"You have something to say?" snapped Utam.
Tagore nodded and said,
"One day I will kill you, rip your spine out through your chest."
"Empty threats," said Utam. "I expected better from you."
"You are more foolish than you look if you think I make empty threats," said Tagore.
"And yet you were the one in confinement."
"This,"
said Tagore, as the nutrition dispenser dropped a pair of foodstuff bags into the cell.
"This won't hold me for long."
Utam smiled, amused despite himself by Tagore's posturing.
"Do you really believe that? Or is it just that abomination hammered into your skull that makes you think so?"
"I am a world-eater," snarled Tagore proudly. "I do not deal in abstracts. I deal in the reality of absolutes, and I know that I will kill you."
Recognizing the futility of further discussion, Utam shook his head and moved deeper into the prison complex. The other inmates gave him cold glares or venomous hostility. But as always, it was Athava who perturbed Utam the most. The witch stood in the centre of his cell, hands straight down at his side and his chin tilted slightly up, as though he was waiting for something. His eyes were closed and his lips moved as though in silent supplication. The rain fell harder here, dripping from the hard permacrete edges of the cell block. Utam's eyes narrowed as the same chill he had felt upon entering the chamber grew stronger still. His combat instincts, already honed from the brief stim shunt, drew in close as he sensed danger. The spear spun in his hand as Athava's eyes opened, and Utam gasped as he saw they were no longer amber and blue, but the shimmering white of a winter sun.
"Pull back!"
he ordered, moving away from the cell door.
"Evacuate immediately!"
"It's too late for that," said Athava.
"Tirtha!"
shouted Utam.
"Danger threatens!"
A blast of superheated air sounded like the crack of a whip, and Utam spun on his heel. Natraj of the Aurelian Stormlords held his plasma gun pulled in tight to his shoulder, the vents along its barrel drooling exhaust gases. Custodians Samant Giri Falguni Tirtha fell to his knees with a smoking hole burned through the centre of his stomach.
"The mountain weeps,"
he said, before pitching onto his front. The interrogation chamber was cold, as it always was, But Kai sensed a strained atmosphere that had nothing to do with Scharf and Hiriko's continued failure to reach the information Sarashina had placed within him. Though Kai's physical frailty made restraints unnecessary, he was still strapped into the contoured chair in the centre of the chamber. Adept Hiriko sat opposite him, and Kai saw dark smudges under her eyes that hadn't been there the last time they had met in the waking world. The process of interrogation was draining her almost as much as it was draining him. Kai said,
"Please, do we have to do this again? I can't give you what you want."
"I believe you, Kai. I really do," said Hiriko. "But if the Legio Custodes cannot have the secrets in your head, they will settle for you dead. They are an unforgiving organization, and if you won't give me what I want willingly, then I have no choice but to tear it out of you."
"What does that mean?"
Hiriko fixed him with a stare that was part melancholy, part exasperated.
"It means exactly what you think it means, Kai. You won't survive this."
"Please," said Kai. "I don't want to die. I don't want to die like this."
"That doesn't matter anymore," said Hiriko. "Others have decided that you must. But if it is any comfort, know that you will soon be unconscious and won't feel a thing."
The door to the interrogation chamber opened before Kai could answer. Adept Scharf entered, looking as though he had been deprived of rest for weeks. The man gave Kai a weak smile, and Hiriko looked up with a concerned glance.
"You are late," she said. "You're never late."
"I slept badly. I dreamed of a figure armoured in crimson and ivory," said Scharf. And something about that description tugged on a thread in Kai's mind.
"He was calling to me."
"What was he saying?" asked Hiriko.
"I do not know. I could hear nothing of his words."
"Residue from the Umbra, perhaps?" asked Hiriko.
"Should I be vexed?"
Scharf shook his head.
"No, I believe it to be bleed off from the psychic trauma caused by the arrival of Primarch Magnus. The crimson and ivory of the figure's armor suggests a link to the Thousand Suns, after all."
Hiriko nodded.
"That appears likely."
Scharf took a seat beside Kai and sifted through the many chem shunts and cannula needles piercing his pallid skin. Kai couldn't move his head to see what he was doing, but his peripheral vision was almost as clear as his binocular vision. Scharf's eyes were ever so slightly unfocused, like a sleeper suddenly awoken from a deep slumber. The man's hands were out of sight, but Kai heard a soft hiss as one of the drug dispensers introduced yet another foreign substance into his bloodstream. Expecting unconsciousness, Kai was mildly surprised to feel tingling at the extremities of his limbs. His eyes flicked to Hiriko, but her beautiful green eyes were perusing lines of text scrolling down the face of a data slate. Kai looked over to Scharf, now able to move his head as whatever chemical Scharf was feeding him began to fully counteract the muscle relaxants and anesthesias keeping him docile. Kai bit his lip as control returned to his body. His limbs were his own again. But it was more than that. This was rejuvenation, a stimulus that was restoring his body with vitality. He wanted to ask Scharf what he was doing, but an instinct for danger warned him to keep his mouth shut. His actions couldn't escape Hiriko's notice for long, and the machines monitoring Kai's vital signs registered his increased brain activity and elevated heart rate. Hiriko glanced over at the bio readouts with twin lines creasing the smooth skin at the bridge of her nose. Her eyes darted from readout to readout, taking in at a glance Kai's return from the brink of dormancy.
"Scharf, have you seen these readings?" she asked, putting aside the data slate and rising to her feet.
When her companion didn't answer, she finally turned to face him, and the surprise in her face was compounded with irritation.
"Scharf, what are you doing? We need Kai unconscious for this procedure."
"No,"
said Scharf.
"No?" replied Hiriko.
Have you lost your mind? Stop whatever it is you're doing. I can't do that, Adept Hariko, said Scharf, in a voice that suggested he very much wished he could. Scharf's hands danced over an exposed keypad on the black box that had been the source of so many of Kai's nightmares recently. Hariko circled the chair and took hold of Scharf's arm. Kai saw her register what he had understood only moments before.
Adept Scharf, snapped Hariko, back away from the prisoner immediately. I believe your mind to be compromised.
Scharf shook his head, and the veins at his temples throbbed like a heart on the verge of cardiac arrest.
The subject must be conscious and motile if he is to leave the facility.
He's not leaving, Scharf, insisted Hariko. Kai felt the metal restraints that bound him to the chair release with a pneumatic hiss as the blare of alarm klaxons sounded throughout Kangbar Mawu.
Oh, but he is, said Scharf, in a voice that was not his own. Natraj was dead before Tirtha hit the ground. Utam's guardian spear spat a bolt from the weapon beneath the blade, and the man's body blew apart into vaporized blood and bone shrapnel. Two of the nearest soldiers went down with the force of the explosion, but Utam was already moving as alarm klaxons and warning bells filled the cavern with noise. Natraj had been compromised, and the loyalty of his fellows was likewise in doubt. For that, all would have to die. Utam swayed aside from a hellgun shot and rammed his spear through the chest plate of a soldier armoured in crimson battle plate. Blood sprayed the golden visor of his helm as he was cloven from hip to collarbone. A rifle barked to the side, deflected by Utam's shoulder guard. He spun low, his spear sweeping in a low arc that sliced through the knees of four of his attackers. A searing blast of plasma blinded him momentarily as it flashed past his helmet and he dropped into a defensive crouch, sweeping his spear around him in a spinning blur of silver and adamantium. Shots ricocheted from the blade, but none penetrated his defences. His sight returned a moment later, and Utam pulled his spear in tight to his body. Diving forward, he rolled to his feet, and another shot punched a warrior armoured in mirror-black armour from his feet. The pulped remains slammed into the wall of the nearest cell block. Threat protocols picked out the dangers. Uralian Stormlord with a hellgun, minimal threat. Two Vitruvian commissars, one with an ion breaker and the other with a grenade launcher, moderate threat. Three Crimson Dragoons, Weber, Plasma Carbine and a Mass Crusher. Immediate threat. They were firing and moving, working better as attackers than they ever had as jailers. But even six highly trained mortals with advanced weaponry were no match for a warrior of the Legio Custodes. Utam swung his spear around and killed the Dragoon armed with the Mass Crusher, taking his head off with a neat cut that cauterized the wound even as it decapitated. The plasma carbine fired again. Utam deflected the shot with a horizontal slash, sending the super-hot bolt into the chest of the commissar with the grenade launcher. He fell with a strangled scream that changed to a shrill howl as the air in his lungs ignited. A hellgun shot impacted on the side of his helmet, and Utam spun to face the shooter. But the two surviving dragoons obscured his aim. They fired at the same time, but Utam was already among them. His blade sliced the first soldier's arm from his body, and the return stroke of the haft shattered every rib in his chest. A warm mist of sticky, mucus-like liquid enveloped Utam, and he felt the rapidly solidifying web gel hardening around his armour. Anyone not blessed with the preternaturally swift reflexes of the Genhanced would have been trapped completely by the web's ultra-rapid setting. But Utam pulled clear before the worst of the gel had done its work. His spear arm was gummed with sticky strands of the stuff, but his left was still free and lethal. A pistoning jab caved in the front half of the web gunner's face, and a following elbow broke the neck of the plasma gunner even as he brought his recharged weapon to bear once more. That just left the grey-clad Stormlord, and Utam jogged in the direction the man had run, shaking the last strands of dissolving web gel from his arm.
"You have to die now,"
said Utam, rounding the corner of the cell block. Shock and horror pulled him up short as he saw the Uralian Stormlord standing before an open cell,
with Sumant, Giri, Falguni, Tirtha's blood-stained signifier ring pressed to the locking panel. A towering figure of rage and scar tissue stood by the open door, pumping muscles bunched and writhing beneath his tattooed skin.
"I am going to kill you," said Tagore of the World Eaters. "Rip your spine out through your chest."
From a cross-leg position, Athava watched the dance of his puppets with a satisfied smile. A tug of thought brought the Aurelian Stormlord running towards his cell, while Tagore and Custodian Utam faced off against one another. Time was critical. He couldn't let the World Eater kill the Custodian, or this escape would be over before it began. His other thrall was already rousing Kai Zulain, though it was proving difficult to maintain his control over Shaf. The man had some training in resisting mental intrusion. Basic training compared to that endured by adepts of the Thousand Suns, but he had natural talents that ensured his will was a slippery thing. His attempts to break Athava's control were amusingly naive, but he had help from his compatriot, and she was a sly little fox. Beads of sweat trickled down Athava's face like tears. Though it was an uncomplicated matter to exert control over mortals, maintaining it through psychically warded permacrete and without being able to see his thralls took great effort. A shape appeared at the door to his cell, a man in a grey tabard, marked with lightning bolts and a crude representation of a diving raptor. The soldier's face was pale, and he wept even as his hand shuddered with the effort of trying to resist Athava's control.
"Don't try to fight it, Teas," said Athava. "You don't have the strength."
Teas Dosnia had served with the Aurelian Stormlords for 6 years, and had been passed over for promotion 3 times. "Too reckless," his superiors said, which in a regiment renowned for leaping from perfectly good aircraft with nothing but a flimsy grav chute to prevent gravity working its inevitable end result on their fragile bodies, was saying something. This secondment to the Legio Custodes was intended to temper his reckless streak with the discipline of the Emperor's Praetorians, but his resentment at being sidelined had only festered until it was practically begging to be used as leverage to open his mind to control. With a cry of impotence, Teas placed the custodian's signifier ring against the lockplate, and the door slid into the walls of the cell. Cut from the hand of a dead man, the ring's skeleton key properties spoke to the arrogance of the Legio Custodes that they had never considered the possibility of one of their precious rings falling into enemy hands. Athava stood in a fluid, uncoiling motion, like a rearing snake poised to strike down its victim. He stepped from the cell, gasping in remembered pleasure as he felt the power of the great ocean swell around him. The psi-damping collar around his neck cracked and broke apart, as though twisted by invisible hands. Its remains clattered to the ground, and Athava laughed as he felt the currents and tides of the great ocean rush to fill his body.
"Teas, the ring, if you please," said Athava, extending his hand.
The horrified Teas dropped the ring onto the plateau of Athava's palm, and he lifted it to his lips as if to kiss it. His tongue flicked out to clean it of blood, and the gene-rich flavour of the custodian's essence flooded his senses, an ambrosia of genetic mastery.
"Oh, this is a wonder indeed, Teas," said Athava. "What secrets might be unlocked by its study? What wonders and miracles might a master like Hathor Mart work with such a palate of genius?"
Teas didn't answer, and Athava handed the pristine ring back to him. He placed one oversized hand upon his thrall's shoulder, placing the images of 5 warriors in the forefront of his mind. 5. All that would be useful from 12. What a waste.
"Teas, I want you to release these men, and these men only," said Athava.
The man nodded, his mind bursting with the need to do Athava's bidding and the horror of what he was doing. Though every fibre of the man's willpower was trying to fight off his control, he was a leaf in the face of a hurricane. Athava watched him run towards the other cells and let his mind float into the mid-level heights of the enumerations that would better enhance his skills in biomanipulation. Sense organs at the back of his throat struggled to assess the content of the custodian's blood, though they could not hope to unravel something so exquisitely constructed. Yet what understanding they could glean might be enough. Though Athava's skills as a Pavoni were not the equal of Hathor Mart, he had mastered enough of the vain fellowship's arts to achieve what would be required to leave this place of confinement, so long as Tagore didn't kill Utam Luna Heshudar too soon. Fists and elbows, knees and feet, they fought in a blur of thundering punches, bone-breaking kicks and titanic impacts. Two warriors, crafted to be the pinnacles of fighting men, flew at each other with rage and neurocortical implants and the finest genetic manipulation on either side of loyalty. Tagore fought with teeth bared, eyes bulging madness. He fought without heed or thought of restraint, with no care for injury or death. Utam Luna Heshudar fought with precision, grace, and exacting killing blows straight from the combat forges of the Legio Custodes. Two warriors of extremes, two warriors primed to deal death in completely different ways. Utam was armoured, Tagore was bare-skinned and bleeding. The custodian's guardian spear lay broken between them, its half snapped like matchwood in Tagore's grip. Its blade fizzed and spat in the moisture drizzling from the cavern's roof. Tagore spun around Utam, kicking his heel into the back of the custodian's knee. Utam went down with a grunt, catching the follow-up knee to the face in his blocking gauntlets. Utam twisted his grip, spinning Tagore from his feet. He followed up, foot thundering down to crush the world-eater's head. Tagore rolled, came up and punched the side of Utam's thigh. Plates cracked, and the paralyzing nerve impact dropped him to one knee. A right cross tore his helmet off, and an uppercut threw him onto his back. Tagore scissored himself to his feet and hurled himself at the fallen custodian. Utam met his flying leap with a downward bludgeoning fist that drove Tagore into the ground like a downed stormbird. Tagore rolled aside from the inevitable head-crushing elbow and sprang to his feet in time to meet the custodian's charge. They grappled like street brawlers, rabbit-punching, kidneys, legs-locking and unlocking as each warrior sought a hold that would drop their opponent. The iron plates bolted to Tagore's head spat fat red sparks as it pumped chem stims and rage boosters into his bloodstream and electrical impulses to the anger centres of his brain. His fury had been building to critical mass ever since his incarceration, and this was just the fight to unleash it. The first advantage went to Utam. Every blow Tagore struck was against artificer-forged plate, hand-shaped in the armories beneath the Anatolian peaks, where Utam hammered unprotected flesh. Pure concussive force cracked the bone shield in Tagore's chest, and he grunted as a pile-driver of an uppercut drove up into his gut. The briefest flinch, but an opening nonetheless. Utam twisted and slammed his elbow into Tagore's jaw. Blood and teeth flew from the world-eater's jaw. Utam closed for the killing blow, but pain was just another stimulus to a killer like Tagore. The world-eater spat a tooth and caught Utam's fist in one raw meat palm. He caught the other fist mid-punch and smashed his forehead into Utam's face. The custodian's nose broke and both cheekbones shattered. Blood blinded him for an instant before he shook his eyes clear of it, but an instant was all Tagore needed. His bloodied fist hammered into Utam's chest, driven by rage and betrayal. ceramite shattered, adamantium buckled and bone broke. Tagore bellowed in atavistic triumph as his power, momentum and strength drove his fist deep into the custodian's chest. Meat and blood parted before his digging hand until his fingers closed on iron-hard bone. The custodian's eyes were wide with agony, his body still fighting for life, even as Tagore ripped it out of him. Tagore spat blood in his face, grinning a manic skull's grin.
"Still think I make empty threats, custodian?"
he snarled. Utam tried to respond, but only managed a horrid sucking noise from his gored chest cavity. Tagore felt bone buckle, crushed beneath his implacable grip. Strong and tough, but not as strong or tough as a sergeant of the World Eaters. A figure appeared at his back, tall and reeking of cold metal and ice.
"Damn you, Tagore! I need him alive!"
said a voice that could only belong to a Thava of the Thousand Suns.
"He can still survive this, Tagore. Don't kill him." "Only Angron and his captains can tell me what to do," hissed Tagore. "One of Magnus's bastards does not."
With an awful cracking sound that seemed to go on, Tagore twisted his grip and wrenched his arm from Utam's chest. Crimson past the elbow, nubs of broken bone protruded from either side of his fist. Glistening mucus-like blood and spinal fluid dripped from the ruptured bone, and in the last seconds of life left to Utam, he realized he was looking at a portion of his own spine.
"Rip your spine out through your chest!"
yelled Tagore, hurling the wreckage of Utam's bone to the ground.
"And what I say I will kill, I kill."
The custodian toppled onto his side, his body still trying to fight the inevitability of his death. But even the formidable endurance wrought into so magnificent a body could not survive such a grievous wound. And Utam Luna Heshudar's life ended in a shimmering pool of his own blood at the feet of a warrior to whom each opponent bested was a badge of honour.
"By the eye, Tagore,"
snapped a Thava, dropping to one knee beside the slain custodian.
"Do you realise what you've done?" "Killed a powerful foe, one worthy of remembrance," said the World Eater.
A Thava waved away Tagore's words.
"Irrelevant," he said,
looking up at the cavern's ceiling and walls, as nearly 100 blister turrets unmasked in readiness to cleanse this floating island of life. Both warriors knew they could not survive such weight of fire.
"The crimson path before the iron fetter!"
bellowed Tagore, lifting his arms to meet death head-on. A Thava laughed in the face of such a wantonly self-destructive code of honour, knowing there was only one way they were going to live through the next few seconds.
"My apologies for this desecration, Utam Luna Heshudar, but my need is greater than yours,"
said a Thava, tearing the dead custodian's head from his shoulders.